This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Bob Woodward, has written a new book called Bush at War. It's a behind-the-scenes account of the Bush administration's first 100 days after September 11th. An epilogue covers more recent planning on how to deal with Iraq. The book is based on notes Woodward obtained from more than 50 meetings, including ones held by the National Security Council. Woodward interviewed more than 100 people involved in the decision-making and execution of the war and conducted two interviews with President Bush. In Woodward's 1991 book, The Commanders, he wrote about the lead-up to the Gulf War during the presidency of George H.W. Bush. Bob Woodward became famous for his investigative reporting after breaking the Watergate story with his colleague Carl Bernstein. Now, you report in your book that before the attacks, the Pentagon had been working for months on developing a military option for Iraq. Who was arguing, even before September 11th, that we should be trying to overthrow Saddam Hussein?
Well, I think it's been on the Bush administration agenda from the beginning, and a lot of people in the Pentagon, Secretary of Defense Wolfowitz, the Deputy Wolfowitz, and the Secretary Rumsfeld, very interested in doing something in Iraq. In fact, on the first night, the secret meeting in the White House, the day of 9/11, Rumsfeld said, should we use this as an opportunity to go after Iraq?
Now, what about Dick Cheney and Colin Powell? They were both leaders of the first Gulf War. They went after Iraq then. How did they feel about including Iraq on the Bush administration agenda before September 11th?
I think somewhat differently. As we know, and I think the book shows in more vivid detail, Vice President Cheney is a hardliner, a hawk. Powell, as was the case in the 1991 Gulf War, is the reluctant warrior. So there was a kind of latent tension before 9/11 within the administration, and that kind of set the stage for Iraq. But interestingly enough, what happened, Bush clearly decided in the first week after 9/11 that we were going to go after bin Laden and al-Qaeda and not Iraq. And when I talked to Bush twice, he kept emphasizing he knew he couldn't attack Iraq in the first phase of any war on terrorism.
Do you get the sense that any of the feelings about the importance of going after Saddam Hussein, if any of that has to do with aftermath from the Gulf War, you know, it's like, well, we didn't get him that time, so this time we're going to get him. And, you know, if in other words, is it personal at all?
I found no evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to lots of people, looked at lots of notes of meetings and so forth, and I think it's in the back of people's minds, but the people, particularly Cheney and Powell and Bush's father, who was president during the Gulf War, feel they did the right thing. That if you look back and get into the details of this, you find that the UN resolution authorizing force in the Gulf War said the purpose is to eject Saddam Hussein and the Iraqis from Kuwait, which had been invaded and taken over by Saddam. That goal was achieved. It was not on the list of things to do at the time, go to Baghdad and overthrow the regime. And so as they look around and they say, we are the superpower, we have the capacity to remake the strategic world, and this man is a threat. He has violated UN resolutions for a decade. Let's think about going.
My guest is Bob Woodward, and his new book is called Bush at War. Now, President Bush was willing to go it alone if necessary in taking on Iraq. It was Colin Powell, who was the biggest force within the administration, to insist that we had to try to get a coalition, get UN support. How did Colin Powell win on that, in the sense that, you know, President Bush made his address to the United Nations and ended up getting support for this round of inspections, of weapons inspections? What did Powell do to convince the president?
I think perhaps one of the most important dinners of recent history was August 5th at the White House, when Powell had asked for a private meeting with the president. That meant Condoleezza Rice, the national security advisor, would sit in, and Powell had actually drawn up a list of reasons why the president could not go to war alone. He actually said to the president, "You may want to go alone, it may seem nice, but you can't." He then laid out essentially eight reasons why, in addition to kind of elaborating on the consequences of a war with Iraq, if the United States was doing it alone and did not operate with allies, some sort of coalition, or through the UN. It's a compelling argument. I lay it out in the book, and the president adopted it. There was lots of pushback from Cheney and Rumsfeld at various stages in this. Up to the last minute, September 12th, it was not absolutely clear what President Bush was going to do. The speech that he gave had 24 drafts, and the asking for new resolutions was out of the speech. He finally agreed it would be in there, but it literally did not make it into the version that was in the teleprompter. He knew it was so important. When he saw that it was not there, he ad-libbed and said the United States would ask and seek new resolutions on Iraq. That was done, as we now know, and the Security Council passed those resolutions 15-0. So,
what was it like for Colin Powell to go it alone within the Bush administration? You say, for instance, that one of the big difficulties he had was that he was supposed to pretend in public that the differences within the war cabinet didn't really exist.
That's right. President Bush likes agreement and consensus, at least in public. Though he did, when I talked to him about this, the president said, "I want people to have different points of view, and I want them to argue forcefully." He would like that to be done only in private, and then everyone salutes and comes out and says, "We agree with the president's decision." The tensions on this issue go so deep, have to do with the worldview of the individuals, their sense of where we are in this moment in history, that it was almost inevitable that they surface.
What is Powell's attitude, if you know the answer to this, what is Powell's attitude about maintaining that public face of unanimity when he has to, even when he strongly disagrees with the Bush administration direction?
Well, he agrees on this. He won the day.
Right.
And it may be the most important issue, at least it appears now to be that, pending before the president and the National Security Council. And they are going his way on some other issues. Certainly in the first 18 months of the Bush administration, as I report, he felt somewhat isolated, had never made the personal connection with the president, which Powell is kind of a specialist at. Has very strong personal connections with all kinds of people, as does the president. They just didn't get in step, in sync. Powell has worked on that relationship. I think it has improved, but there were moments when he used to joke with his deputy that he had been put in the refrigerator or the icebox, only to be brought out and used when needed by the White House.
My guest is Bob Woodward. He's written a new book called Bush at War. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bob Woodward is my guest. His new book is called Bush at War, and it's an inside look about what happened inside the Bush administration in the first 100 days after September 11th. But there's also information a little more recent than that about Iraq. Let's look at one of the issues shortly after September 11th, and that was how much should President Bush have emphasized bin Laden as like the central figure? And that was the subject of some debate within the Bush administration. What was the debate about? Who was on each side?
Well, it was particularly Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld who said, don't emphasize bin Laden. In fact, in the famous speech that the president gave to Congress on September 20th, 9 days after the terrorist attacks, Rumsfeld up to the end was saying, don't even mention bin Laden in that speech once. The president decided he had to and did mention him once. And of course, as people may recall, he said publicly that he wanted bin Laden dead or alive. There was much emphasis on that. When they didn't get bin Laden, and it was pretty clear he had escaped and that perhaps he was dead, there was much less emphasis on him. In operational terms, the fact that we have been able to destroy the sanctuary that bin Laden had in Afghanistan, the fact that the CIA has rounded up or had foreign intelligence services or police forces in 80 countries round up thousands of terrorists, suspected members of bin Laden's organization, has put a crimp in the organization and certainly disrupted some terrorist plans. Now, I think there's much more disappointment that they haven't found bin Laden. Bush has a private scorecard in his desk where he X's out people when they're killed or captured. And Bush's tendency is to personalize things. I think he takes, it's bin Laden versus Bush. The fact that bin Laden has survived certainly the biggest manhunt in perhaps the history of civilization is frustrating to the president.
In doing the research for this book, did you learn anything that you didn't know before about what the Clinton administration had tried to do with bin Laden, or about if the Clinton administration was effective in passing off its information about bin Laden to the Bush administration?
The Clinton administration had done a lot, particularly through the CIA. They actually had a tracking team of paid Afghan agents in Afghanistan who were following bin Laden around and could report with some regularity where he was. They were not authorized to try to kill him or assassinate him, and there was an unwillingness to really even seriously consider that or do that. The same in the first 9 months of the Bush administration. They really never got a anti-bin Laden policy going, but it is the capacity the CIA had that was funded and created during the Clinton years that made, after 9/11, the rather remarkable on-the-ground effort by the CIA possible. And if there had not been that support or the money or the willingness to support some of the activities in Afghanistan, some of the covert work that was done, the Afghan war, at least the first phase of it, would not have gone the way it did.
Can you give us a sense about what the process is of the war cabinet meetings, like how the meetings are run, what the interactions are like between the people?
It starts off generally with the CIA director giving an intelligence update, or in the case of the war in Afghanistan, a progress report, what's going on. Then Secretary Powell would give a rundown on the diplomacy and what's going on in his area. Then Secretary Rumsfeld would give an account of the war or war plans. Those are the three main players in the war cabinet who have operational responsibility. Cheney, the vice president, tends to not say a lot, tends to speak at the end.
Is he there or is he on speakerphone?
No, he's there much of the time, but if he is off on off at his undisclosed location, he comes up on what they call civets, which is a secure video conferencing system. So not only his voice, but his face is there. And Condi Rice tends to coordinate and think about what they're going to meet about next. And the president interjects. When I interviewed him, he said, you know, quite candidly, he said, sometimes I tend to be almost a gas bag at these meetings and go on and talk too much, and it's a bad habit, and I should stop it. He interjects and talks quite a bit, and one of the things I found, he's the ultimate decision maker. Dick Cheney is not running the government, though Dick Cheney is probably the most important overall advisor on these matters.
President Bush is well known for hating leaks, for liking to have unanimity among his people, and for being pretty tough with the press in terms of not revealing a lot of information. A lot of reporters have actually been complaining about how difficult it is to get information from the Bush administration. What were you able to learn about President Bush's process for maintaining that kind of public unanimous face and for trying to prevent leaks?
Well, he's pretty strong on it. At the same time, I was able to get a very unusual amount of information. I had the luxury of time to work for months and months on this. And when I sent him a 20-page memo outlining what I knew, said I wanted to talk to him, he sat for 2 hours and 25 minutes and answered up to 300 questions about what actually happened in the course of the war and some of the attitudes he had and where it came from. Was not resistant. He didn't deny a thing, and some of the issues were very sensitive. At the same time, he knew his voice would be included in this book and that I had a lot of very specific information, made the calculation for reasons I don't fully understand to answer the questions. And I think he ought to do more of that. I think the biggest fear in this country, particularly in a time of war, a time when there are so many threats out there, the biggest threat is secret government. And the less secret it is, the better off we all are, and ultimately the better off the government is.
In your interview with President Bush, what's one of the most surprising or telling things that he revealed to you?
Overall, that he has a vision of almost wants to remake the world, this idea that American leadership is going to be the shaping force in the world. As he said, I will seize the opportunity to achieve big goals. And he wants to be the liberator in countries where people are oppressed, maintains his goal is world peace, that he's concerned about mothers and starving children, and that there is a determination. And at one point, he said, maybe it's my religion. Maybe it's just a gut instinct. Maybe it's visceral. But that he feels you either believe in freedom and worry about the human condition, or you don't. And that he, it is an almost Woodrow Wilson-like view of creating a new world order and using his presidency for that purpose. I did not expect him to outline that.
Well, Bob Woodward, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Bob Woodward's new book is called Bush at War. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.